You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someplace. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle and Jordan. How are you doing this weekend? Nice weather, huh? I was so afraid that we were going to go from stormy, rainy, windy to 99 degrees, and we didn't. This is just perfect weather. And it's a good thing because in the last 3 days, I've been to 5 farmers markets, and I'm really glad I did not have to do that in, really high heat or freezing cold. So before I introduce tonight's guests, I want to say a couple things about what we're going to be doing and about farmers markets. At the Occidental Market on Friday night, which is a lovely market, very much of its location, there was this great music. It was by a man who lives in Boys Hot Springs, I believe, Michel Saga. He was singing Songs of Paris, and he has this great gravelly, almost gruff voice, and he's got something, and I don't have the right word for it. It's like a music box that sits on, he has this whole cart built, and the music comes from feeding this huge cardboard accordion with cuts in it, and he has this big stack of different songs to choose from. So he'd start feeding one of those through, and the music sounds very much like you would hear on an old-fashioned carousel. And then he sings, and he's going to be back at the Occidental Market on July 15th, I think it is, and then again sometime in September. But he's a local man, well, from Paris originally, but he lives locally. This kind of music is such a treasure, and I bought one of his CDs. I think he had 5 for sale. I bought one of them, and we'll be featuring music from him, Michel Saga, this evening. The whole show is inspired by farmers markets. Yesterday, when I went, for the second time, I saw a big, huge paella pan. This is at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market, and it was Fabiano Ramacci. Did I get that light?
You got
right?
it. Perfect.
Fabiano Ramacci, who's not only a chef who makes fabulous paella, some of the best I've had on this side of the Atlantic. Really, really good. And I loved when I had it a couple of weeks ago, the harissa with it.
Yeah, that harissa really brings it all together.
Absolutely.
I'm really drawn to the Middle Eastern flavors as well, and I thought it was a nice little touch to add to the paella.
Yeah, really a wonderful combination, and I love Middle Eastern flavors as well. Oh, also cool. In the studio with us is his wife, Elena Ramacci.
Yeah,
thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you
We're
for
so
inviting
delighted
me.
To be here. Thank you.
And then we also have, so that's the Spanish part of the show. Spanish Middle Eastern part. We also have Fresh from Paris. why you're in such a good mood, I'm not sure, because you're back. Although, if you have to leave Paris, best to come to Sonoma County. Dominique Cortara of Dominique Sweets.
Mm-hmm, hello.
Thanks so much for being here, especially since you had 2 other events today.
Oh, thanks, Michelle.
And a couple months ago, I was saying, I was speaking with Condra Eastley and her sister Deborah Morris of Patisserie Angelica. They've started a Cake of the Month Club and also a holiday cake club where for holidays, you can choose what holidays. I said, somebody needs to start a Cookie of the Month club because cookies are just something, even if you don't love sweets, just even the word cookies make you happy. Mm-hmm. And here you have a Macaroon of the Month Club.
Yes, I
and that's
do.
About as close as you can get to, you know, because it's sort of a macaroon's a cookie of sorts, right?
It is. It's a little pastry, three-part with a lot of different textures, but you can really go seasonal with it, with the fillings.
Mm-hmm.
You can do fruits that are in season, and nuts, different, like in June, I'm doing summer flavors, so I'm going to have a root beer float macaroon and a chocolate milkshake macaroon and a watermelon macaroon.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
So what we're going to go into the details of Dominique's sweets and maybe even sample these beautiful little macaroons, but we're going to do that second because it's dessertish.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to go to back to the paella, but also I have to add that Fabiano, you're also a winemaker.
Yes, correct.
And tell us about your label.
Well, my wife and I started this brand called Mora Estate, and I was actually thinking about what names we should actually come up with at the time, and it was like shortly after dinner one night, and I said, "Honey, you know, we need to come up with a name that's unique, and how are we going to put this all together?" And so I took the first two letters of her maiden name, which is Mondino, which means world in Italian.
Mondo, for Mondo.
Mondo. Mm-hmm. And my last name is Ramacci, which means branch.
Which so comes from like, Rama.
So we're like, oh my God, here we go. You know, not only that Mora actually means blackberry in Italian, but we're actually branching out to the world. So we're like, there, we got it. We got our little tagline right there, ready to go. So now we've become Mr. and Mrs. Mora.
And we're a little bit... We're
really excited. You know, I took up winemaking as a hobby about 15 years ago. I've been in the restaurant industry all my life.
Now, have you lived here for a long time?
We've been up here for about 22 years.
Okay.
Originally San Francisco.
San mm-hmm. Francisco.
So you started just as a hobby making wine in Sonoma County?
Well,
I started actually when I was at my restaurant in San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what restaurant?
It was called Concerto. I was 22 years old at the time. And, you know, my father had a famous restaurant in San Francisco called La Traviata.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So we used to cater to the opera stars. Uh-huh. And at a very young age, I was always exposed to wonderful private events over at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And so I was turned on to all these fabulous wines at a very young age. So I acquired a palette for these Barolos and Barbarescos and Amarones and all these great things. And with that said, I decided to, at some point in my life, take winemaking as a hobby, mm-hmm. As a project. And I wanted to turn it into a career. But in my early 20s, I decided to open up my own restaurant, which I had for 10 years. And then I got to a point where I felt like I maxed out, and I just wanted to take it one step further. And I told my wife that, you know, let's sell the restaurant and move up north, and let's get things rolling.
Well, he actually said to me, I said, if you can make wine as good as you can create your culinary magic, we'll have both things mastered, and it would be quite a beautiful thing to present to people. And he actually achieved that.
So I basically turned my single car garage into my little cantina where I was able to
market.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea. I love that sort of thing.
You know, great things have started out in small places, you know.
Yeah. In garages.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, William Sellum was like one of the things I always kept in the back of my mind. It's like, wow, you know what? It's like, this is where you keep your costs down. You can actually run a whole bunch of little trials and see how things work out. So what's beautiful about this point in my life now is that all these wines that I made in the last 10 years, I'm able to like
enjoy them,
open them up and kind of like evaluate, you know, go back to my notes and see, you know, how things, you know, integrated over the years. Mm-hmm. And it actually turned out really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, so
we're going to taste something tonight?
Yeah. You know, I brought the 2010 Rosato that we're going to be releasing in the next couple weeks. We just got our label approved. And
so is this going to be your first commercial release?
Second,
okay.
Yeah,
Rosato from Barbera.
Yeah, so it's 100%, it's actually 90% this year. I made 90% Barbera from 41-year-old vines. And I added a little bit of Viognier champagne in this particular vintage. The reason so is that the Barbera has nice crisp acidity, and I just wanted to round it off a little bit bring a little bit of a floral note that the Viognier actually has to contribute. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's a great food wine. It's great for this kind of weather. So it's time to pop the bottle and you just enjoy it.
Okay.
We have it actually in the refrigerator.
Oh yeah, have it in the refrigerator. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before you do that,
yes,
let's just talk a little bit. We'll talk then about the paella you have here.
Yes.
Take a musical break and you can run and get it.
Okay.
So tell us about this paella that we're looking at and smelling.
Well, the paella was inspired because I was actually, I was born in Sicily. And
where in Sicily?
A little town called Augusta near Catania.
Okay.
on the west side of the island, or east side, excuse me. And, just the influences between the Greeks, the Moors, the Spaniards. I mean, it's got it all. And just putting all these exotic spices together and everything, I just felt like, you know what? I've done Italian food for many years. I just wanted to do something a little bit different. And then Elaine was always telling me, like, you got to get out to the people, you know? So
feed the people.
Feed the people. Yes, we are feeding in the farmer's market every other week. Yeah, exactly. So it's really an art. I mean, you know, getting involved in making paellas is just like, you just by layering the flavors and kind of like, halibut stock that I, prepare.
Is that what you use as halibut stock?
I'm using halibut stocks. Yeah, mm-hmm. I take the bones, make that nice fumet, cook it for hours, strain it, reduce it down, so you got rich flavors, and this is the foundation of creating something. It's very much like wine. You're layering the flavors. How do you do it? You have techniques, and there's certain things that you do in the vineyards, and certain things that you do as far as being a winemaker. So the elements I'm very used to and I'm familiar with. So to me, it seems to be quite easy. And as I'm doing these paellas every other week now, I'm just like, you know what? There's a little element that I'm always kind of like coming up with. That's kind of like, I think it's my little niche. And I think it has to do with some of the product lines that Elaine and I are working on that we're going to be releasing soon as well.
We're still in development.
Yeah, so we are in the process of, we live in the beautiful wine country that gives us all these wonderful things to work with. So it's very inspiring when you wake up in the morning. You don't necessarily have to have a particular thing in mind. It's more about going to the farmer's market and let that allow you to kind of like inspire you.
Yeah, let the market talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're doing is we're basically trying to capture the essence of where we live. So we came up with our product line that's going to be called Sonoma Essence.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, why don't we take a little musical break? You can grab that Rosato, and we'll be back with more talk here on Methyl. Music by Michel Saga. Okay, we got a bottle ready to open. One of my favorite sounds here on Mouthful.
All right. Hold on a second here. God, I haven't used one of these corkscrews in a long time.
There we go.
That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
And this is the Rosato.
Rosato of Barbera, yes, 90%.
And that's interesting. Not a lot of people know that Viognier is often added to red wine.
Yeah. Exactly, but it's Syrah.
Yeah, Syrah. Yeah, and it actually enhances color.
Yeah, exactly. So. But in this case, I was just thinking because of the bright acidity that it has, it's a great food wine because especially if you're eating something kind of rich and you want the acidity to cut right through it, you know, so it works out really well. So I'm sharing it here.
Well, thank you.
So I think the Barbera, I've been making Barbera since 1997. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was on a mission in 1997 to try to locate the oldest Barbera vineyard that I can locate. And led me to Lodi.
To Lodi, yeah. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel so blessed because I got three rows dedicated to this project. I get 3 tons per acre. So it's just basically what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And it's consistent. It's beautiful. It's the most probably the versatile varietal I've ever worked with because, as you can see, it makes a great rosé. It's wonderful as a blend, and it's also wonderful as a wine 100% red. So salute, Chin Chin.
Thank you.
Cheers. It's really refreshing.
It's really refreshing.
As it should be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great, summer. I think it's a great year-round food wine, but it's really fabulous in the summer. And it's a perfect wine to enjoy with a paella.
Oh, absolutely. And the whole idea of like with the risotto was actually inspiring as well when I was a sommelier in Nantucket several years ago.
Oh, you were sommelier there?
At one of the restaurants there. And it was just a wonderful experience because all the fabulous wines that we always read about and heard about, you know, I actually got to try them, you know. And one of the wines that I really kind of like, that I really enjoyed that kind of like stood out was the Bandols.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Bandols. Yeah, you're right, the Bandols from the Rhone region. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm drinking a 10-year-old rosé that you think that it would just be gone by now. And it's just like, you know, I was so impressed of the structure and the complexity that the wine had. And I said to myself, well, I don't really work with Grenache or Syrah or Carignan, blah, blah, blah. So I said that Barbera would be a perfect candidate for something like that. And we also needed a workhorse to kind of introduce ourselves in the market. So that's why I established the rosé of Barbera.
There you go. And it's really, really quite nice.
Oh, thank you.
But I want to hear more about what's in this risotto because I'm really eager to now try the two together.
Yeah. You know, what I'm doing is I'm actually getting piquillo peppers and smoking them.
Oh, you are? Oh, great.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one of the things of the essence that I'm talking about because I take, like, the barrel chips. I'm using byproducts now that I utilize into this products. And, you know, get the barrel chips, break them down, and then smoke the peppers. And then I infuse it into the olive oil. So that is, like, the base when I'm kind of, like, searing the shrimp and getting those flavors going. So it's got prawns, calamari. It's got scallops, clams, mussels. It's got the chorizo. I'm actually having Yanni over in Pengrove making these sausages for me. So I'm providing them with my spices and stuff. And it also has sherry wine in there as well. And it's been really exciting to be able to actually start working on these products because it's everything that I've been working on for like the last 10, 12 years. So, you know, I may be sitting over here and talking about it, but this was in development a long time ago. And
what rice do you use?
Bomba.
Bomba. Yeah. Is that the traditional paella rice?
They seem to have quite a few different types.
Several,
you know, I'm kind of experimenting with it, but I've been using this for the last month now, and I really enjoy it. I'm getting some consistency out of it, and between combining the halibut stock and the chicken itself, the chicken stock as well, it's really bringing in some wonderful flavors. And I'm also getting the the soulness that everybody looks for, the sacarón, you know. And you can't say that there's no flavor because it's got everything you need in there.
You know? You certainly can't say there's no flavor.
Yeah, and the saffron.
One of the things I'd like to do is compare risotto and paella. One of the classic qualities of risotto, of course, is the creaminess.
Correct.
And you stir and you stir and you stir.
Exactly.
In paella, you don't stir, right?
No, you don't. In the beginning, you can just to get all your ingredients together and balancing out the paella pan and so forth. But you primarily want to kind of like you add your stock and you're pretty much leaving it
just
alone.
Just leave it.
Yeah.
And why the big, huge flat pan? What is that function?
Well,
just to cook a lot?
Well, you know, it's one of the things that I've noticed that I've actually taught that I learned about it was that when you add your stock, you get it to the level where the handles are. So, if you set in a deep pan,
you got too much stock in it, and it
goes back to what you're saying. So, if the rice is on top of each other and there's too much weight between the seafood and the rice, it's not going to be quite the same.
It's going to get mushy, and it's going to just be a different thing.
Yeah, no, exactly. Uh-huh. But you know, if you go to Venice, Italy, you know the risottos with the seafoods are fabulous. Where you add the rice and the peas to it, you know,
It's just a totally different thing.
Yes,
do you ever cook? The pasta equivalent of paella. I've seen lots of different names, fedwa, where they use the little short 1-inch pasta and cook it. In some instances, they use the big pan and they just toast it before they add a fish fumet.
Right.
And then in some instances, they toast it in the pan, add the fish fumet, and then nearly as much seafood as you would a paella.
No, I'm not familiar with that, but I mean, I can see why they are...
I've never seen it in America.
Right.
I've only seen it in Spain. Well, I actually saw it in a Spanish restaurant in Germany as well, but they were a little... short on the concept, shall
we
say.
Now that you brought that up, Michelle, he'll probably...
maybe we'll have to get together. Yeah. You cook paella for me. I'll cook fedwa for you, because it's one of my favorite things in the world. And I had to... I had it at a... Went to a calçotada. You know, calçots are the sort of leek-like onion in the bar... Catalonia, and they have these festivals in February when they're, when they're harvested.
Right.
And... it's a huge meal in itself. I mean, just when you're finishing a plate of like 100 calçots, you think, okay, I can't eat another thing. They whisk the platter away and bring you another 100. I mean, this is for a table of four. And then there's other prescribed foods. There's meats from the grill. There's goat, pork, beef, and a sausage, and potatoes.
Wow.
And then you have to have... crema catalan after, and they were just about, we had been eating for hours, and they were bringing, just about ready to bring us the crema catalan when a waiter walked by with a plate of this pasta to another table, and it's like, no, stop everything. I don't care if we're full. We have to have that.
Wow.
And it was so good.
Oh, right.
And I spent the rest of my time there the next 2 weeks trying to find another version.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't find one as good as that one, so I came home and started working on it.
Well, there you go.
So mine isn't that good, but it's good.
Perfect.
So do we get to taste this?
Yes, if you like.
I just have to have a little tiny bit to pair with this wine.
I set it all up for you.
It's very beautiful.
There we go.
And you have some society garlic on top. Oh, look at that. Okay, I'll take this little...
the little calamari?
Little calamari.
Exactly. You know, the saffron imparts that nice color and flavor, gives the rice itself a nice depth.
And it pairs really well.
That we're looking for.
It pairs really well.
And, God, it's just like when
it's perfect with the wine.
Yeah.
It's absolutely perfect.
So your heat that you use, I read this book on Spanish cooking, and I was make my little paellas at home, but the thing that I learned about the heat is they start it all with a hot fire, and then they kick the fire apart so that it's just the coals that finish it.
Oh, yeah, no, that's great. But, you know, it all depends on your guests, too, because, I mean, I love heat. I'm Sicilian, and but, you know, I have to put everybody else in consideration that I, you know, eating or cooking for.
The cooking heat.
Yeah.
The cooking
heat. You mean the fuel.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to the harissa part.
I like spicy stuff, too.
No, she's talking about the cooking heat on the base of the paella pan.
Once you add your stock to it, you want to get it as high as possible. But then as the embers, then you kind of want to, like, you know, trim it down. But, and just going with those Moorish flavors, this is where the element I was telling you about earlier, about the, you know, Middle Eastern kind of side of it. That's like, I don't know, I get excited about it.
Yeah. It's got that long, slow burn that's not at all, that's totally pleasant.
Right.
It's just, the first couple bites are not, or the first couple seconds in your mouth.
Right.
It's not hot, and then the heat starts to blossom. Mm-hmm. And then after you swallow, that heat just lingers, like the long finish of a wine. It's really beautiful flavor.
Great.
Really beautiful flavor. Do you have any sense, and you don't have to have an opinion about this, paella has suddenly gotten so popular.
It has.
Especially at farmers markets and at winery events.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a sense.
Why? Do we know?
I think I do know.
Okay.
I think
now
it's
she's using her psychic abilities.
Right. No, I think the popular part of that would be is that paella is so visual and it's so beautiful. Not only does it taste good, you get the visual. And, you know, and you actually get the person that is right in front of you that's making this beautiful dish. And so people like to watch how that's being done. So as a floral designer, you know, I was inspired by even the paella pan, which my husband...
Yeah, the pans are so gorgeous.
They're beautiful. I mean, those were from Spanish Kitchen, but they're beautiful. And even we were doing a wedding for 200, like July 2nd, and I said, you know, the people that said, you know, it's such a visual thing. We want you guys to come up here and do that. It's so visual.
Well, it stimulates your appetite.
It stimulates, and the aromatherapy that comes off that pan mm-hmm. when, you know, we did the first farmer's market, 3 Saturdays ago. I mean,
yeah,
it just impregnated through the air, and people mm-hmm. were just coming and saying, can I stand here just for the smell? And I'm like, yeah, no problem. You know, do I have to pay for that? And I go, no, it's free.
Really?
That's hilarious.
So I think it's a visual thing. It's a soothing thing to the soul, you know, and people are really craving that nowadays. They need that, mm-hmm. you know. So that's my opinion on it, mm-hmm. you know.
But it is an art. I mean, as mm-hmm. I mentioned, I noticed and, you know, I'm kind of like shifting, changing my little technique as I'm mm-hmm. kind of doing it, you know, and it's great to see.
Yeah,
that.
It just seems to have all of a sudden reached critical mass in this area.
Sure, and well, there's variations everywhere you go.
I
mean,
throw down, so maybe that's good.
throw down. Well, you know, if we have to have a throwdown.
Yeah, well, there was somebody, and I'm not going to remember the name right now. Someone from Petaluma, uh-huh. who was making paella at the Roanoke Park Farmers Market on okay. Friday night. There's also very popular paella at the Occidental Farmers Market,
of course.
And then there's. A man, and I really apologize for not having his name at the tip of my tongue, but he's at events at Gloria Ferrer.
Oh, okay.
The champagne house,
right.
Which has, you know, its parent company is in Catalonia.
Oh.
And he makes absolutely gorgeous, you know, your two are comparable. His is just really, really beautiful.
Oh, great.
And he's been around at a number of events, too. So suddenly there's several options, and it's like, cool, great. And as I was driving here, I was thinking, yeah, it might be time for something where you get all the paella makers. And because you know how they do the chili, you know,
sure.
I think Friday night there was the chili cook-off, and they have the people's choice favorites, but then they also have a panel of judges
sure.
and so all that. It might be time to do something
hey,
like that with paella.
Let's book the Gypsy Kings and Paco de Lucia.
There we go.
I'm ready for a throwdown.
Okay, well, there we go. Let's take another little musical break here on Mouthful, and we'll be right back, and we'll be getting to our sweet talk really soon.
Thank you.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Lynn and Jordan. Thanks for sticking with us. We are talking with Fabiano and Elena Ramacci. Your business, Perla Stella, is that right? Perla Stella. We also have in the studio with us, and she'll be saying a lot more really soon, and that is Dominique Cotara of Dominique Sweets. And she has the most beautiful little macaroons sitting here. So, hand-painted bottles. Elena, talk to us about that.
Okay, so
where do we begin?
When my husband first decided he was going to do this project, you know, we were talking labels, and I am a floral designer by trade, and I just looked at the bottle and I said, well, let me just try to play with this. So I took the brush and put it to the bottle, and I started to play, and I said, what do you think? And my husband said, that's beautiful. So we kind of test marketed that, and we found that people were not throwing away the bottles, or they were saying it was so beautiful they didn't want to open the wine. And I said, no, open the wine. It's beautiful. You have to. So it kind of became a thing for us. Mm-hmm. When I went to present it to get approval with ABC, they said, absolutely, you can do that. And I was like, well, why didn't anybody else do this?
You know, there is one that I know of, very, very small production, but with a really touching story. Okay. And I have a bottle. I'll take a picture and I'll send it to you.
Okay, cool.
It's called, it's Angel's Wing.
Oh, I see.
And it's from Mary Edwards.
Oh.
And it's a very, very special bottling in honor of her son who died during this particular harvest. And so what she did was she took the very, very finest of the barrels of Pinot Noir from that harvest. And it's this incredible angel's wing.
Put
it on the bottle. And just, I mean, it's really limited. I think it was sold only through the winery. So it's not something you would ever see sitting on a shelf.
Well, that's interesting that you even brought that up, Michelle, because what helped me heal, because my mom passed away, and I do work with angels, was to paint these bottles.
Oh, interesting.
So that's what kind of led me into doing it. So, you know, now I'm attached to doing it. So that's where
And you know, because of the setup in the studio, I can't actually see the bottle, so I'm going to get you to hold it up or pass it to me.
Oh, we have our little friend here.
That's beautiful.
Oh yeah, that's really pretty. It's like an impressionist bouquet.
And then here's the other one for the rosé.
Yeah, and each
so it's
time
becoming like our niche. I mean, we usually don't follow people's programs. We don't, you know, we want to start our own trends.
Well, I think they're very striking. They're very pretty.
I mean, I think it found me.
Our production is low and high quality, and we basically that's what we want to implement in our program.
But what I think what's neat about it is, and with the messages, is that if you have a dream and you really believe in what you're doing and you have passion, you can actually really make a statement with it. And we started out as just like we weren't sure where this was going to go, and it's been embraced. So I'm really happy to be able to present Moore Estate with hand-painted labels. And
when you say hand-painted, how does that actually work?
Well, how does it actually work?
one by one.
I mean, you don't actually paint on the bottle, do you?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yes, I
do. Oh, my gosh.
It's not like we have paint on the table and then she just gets her hands and just...
No, but I mean, there's some technique, and I can't remember off the top of my head. Mary Edwards described the technique.
Okay, I heard that.
Put onto the bottle.
Mm. Right. No, I'm not using that technique.
So you're actually hand painting?
Yes. I'm hand painting each bottle.
Even Joey is astonished at that.
Yeah, even Joey.
Hopefully we get famous before we get carpal tunnel.
No, Joey's really happy by that. But yeah, no, I actually hand paint each bottle myself. I know there is that other method that you're speaking of. And it's also a way, when you're holding the bottle for me, to impregnate what I feel into that bottle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really based from love, you know. And so that's kind of how it came about.
If you grow much, you're going to have to
I've kind of already figured the way we go. We would make it exclusive, or 500 cases is my minimum. And then after that, we could always commission other artists, or we can go a different route. But I'm happy with this route at this point.
Yeah, that's really quite a remarkable thing to do. Well, before we move on to desserts, talk a little bit about harissa.
Oh, yes.
Harissa, of course, that first day that you were at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market, you added a little squiggle of harissa alongside the paella. It added that punch that harissa adds to everything, sort of a marriage of North African and Spain, and plenty of tradition there. So how do you make your harissa?
Well, the original recipe actually called for towards the end of the season when all these peppers are available. And I probably acquired about 14 different types, and I sun-dried them in my backyard.
But a combination of sweet and hot?
Yes. Correct. The only problem with that is, like, you know, I need to work on getting the consistency of the heat going. So, you know, we're trying to figure that out. But that's how I'll stand it up, because I also make the conserva tomatoes, the tomato paste. So the recipe came through a friend of mine's mom that she shared it with me, and I added preserved lemons to that recipe. So I kind of gave it a little bit of my own spin to it. So I think the combination between the lemons and the fresh mint really brought
it. Fresh mint as well.
Exactly.
And how do you pulverize the peppers?
Just through food processor.
Food processor. Yeah, and then exactly. Do you add any caraway?
No, not at all.
Okay. Some traditional recipes have caraway, some don't. So I'm really curious. I don't know the trail of caraway, but I know some of them it has caraway, and I was initially surprised to see that. It's something I think of more as Russian and more northern.
Right, cumin,
yes,
yeah,
cumin.
You can add ginger if you like as well, but
ginger I haven't seen.
Yeah, so
oh, interesting.
But you know, I'm all about condiments. I mean, anybody that knows me comes into my house, opens up my refrigerator. It's
all condiments.
I'm condiments because I can make any dinner at any time. You know what I mean?
It's like, my kids always say to me, "Mama, you have nothing in the refrigerator but condiments."
What do you mean? Are you kidding? It's like, I could take a Tuesday night and make it a Friday night, no problem. You know what I mean? So I've done that many times. So the condiment's really important, and I love chimichurri as well.
Oh, chimichurri.
You know what
yes.
I mean?
So, and you should describe that for people who don't know. It's one of the great sauces.
Fresh herb salsa that goes
lots
well
of
with
cilantro,
meats.
Lots of garlic, lots of lemon,
rosemary, sage, thyme, marjoram. I mean,
grilled rare ribeye steak with chimichurri.
Awesome. And it's so versatile because you can actually use the chimichurri or even the harissa in this particular case. You either use it as a condiment or use it as a marinade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it just really imparts a lot of flavor. It's almost like it breaks down the tissue and it just marinates the meat and just imparts all those wonderful flavors. You set it on the grill. Keep it simple. That's what I learned. It's like, you don't want to complicate and add a bunch of ingredients into something, because I'd be very happy just to take a little piece of hanger meat or a skirt steak off the grill.
Hanger steak and skirt steak with,
you know,
chimichurri.
I mean? Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh.
It's awesome.
And you don't make like five batches at one time. Just do one at a time and just share it with your friends. Just cut it and just pass it around. You know what I mean?
It's see chimichurri a lot in Argentina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So that's Buenos Aires, always on the table in steakhouses.
Right. So, I mean, I've been, at a very young age, I've been exposed to a lot of wonderful things. My mom's a great cook. My father's a chef. So
La Traviata. What's your favorite opera?
La Traviata. No, actually, you know what? Aida is actually pretty
Aida.
Nice. Yeah. I thought, because I got turned on to it at such a young age, that my first opera was actually I Puritani that my godfather took me to. And bless his soul, you know, he meant well, but it was just such a dramatic, intense opera that I couldn't wait to intermission to have my martini. You know what I mean? But I felt at that age, Aida was probably the one that I would probably feel like I would want to see because of, you know, the settings, you know, so that was it.
Yeah, my two favorite arias come from operas I've never seen.
Oh.
La Rondine and Gianni Schicchi.
Ah, wow.
And I would love to see those at some point just to see how those favorite arias fit in. See, we can go down lots of avenues here on
Novel.
We
can talk about La Tosca, too. You know,
yes, and of course La Boheme. Anyway, it's time to turn to sweets. You have been so patient, Dominique. So again, it's Dominique Sweets, and you can always go to the website. Both of my guests tonight have websites. Dominique'sSweets.com is one, and PearlLestelle.com.
Which means for the stars.
Yes. So, You just got back from Paris. What were you doing in Paris?
I was investigating macaron in Paris. Okay. And I went to, because I learned how to make them in Paris. And I've been, it's been 5 years since I've been in Paris. And we also went for fun. I went with my mother. Not that eating macarons isn't fun. But we went and I just wanted to see if I'm still on the right track. Mm-hmm. And I am. I'm doing great. And I was really happy to find that out. But we went to some macaroon palaces like Pierre Hermé and La Durée. And we
I have to say, this is something I'm not up to speed on. Okay. There are macaroon palaces.
They're palaces to dorky people like me.
No, that's okay. I mean, I have my dorky elements, believe me. But there's just this whole macaron subculture.
There's a total macaron culture. And in France, I had this bag, which is a Pierre Hermé bag, and because I bought this gigantic volume. Like the second day I was there, it weighs like 15 or 17 pounds or something. I dragged it all over France with
me. And what is it?
It's this book on his pastries, and he has a whole chapter on macaron. But you go in, the La Durée shop is so beautifully decorated, and they have ribbons with their names. They have people are in line out the door to go in there to get these macarons and all the different colors and flavors. And also Pierre Hermé, it was quiet when we were there, but they have all different flavors and macaroon pyramids. And it's just macarons are, they used to mostly be found in Paris, and I found them all over France this trip.
And for somebody who doesn't necessarily know the true French version, can you strip it down to its essence without going into the flavors? What is the basis of it?
It's almond powder and a meringue.
Oh.
So it's egg whites and almond powder. And they started, it was just the cookie for a long, long time. And then in the mid-19th century, somebody at La Durée decided to put them together with a creamy ganache in the middle.
Oh, so they were just the little meringue thing. Okay.
So an Italian amaretti cookie is kind of a macaroon, but it's not as refined as a French macaroon.
Okay.
The French macaroons are smooth. They come in a lot of different colors. You can make your colors, like a currant macaroon will be kind of a violety purple color, and chocolate. They have, they had some black macaroon over there. With
black? Licorice?
Yeah, it was
really?
Licorice. Squid ink. Yeah. And then
squid ink.
Squid ink. I'm one of those people who loves licorice, which I had a boyfriend a long time ago who used to call licorice the liver of the candy world.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
I love licorice.
Yeah,
licorice is nice.
But yeah, they're these pretty little cookies, and you can get really.
So they're like now a sandwich with the meringue, almond meringue, forming the bread, and then a ganache
where
the flavor.
Yeah, a creamy filling in the centers. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can do a jam or a ganache or a caramel.
And
or
you are these two types that you have? No, they're more than two types.
There are two types. I brought some rose and some salted caramel.
Well, I know that Elena is just so eager to try a rose.
She's
pass
kicking me under
a
the
rose.
Table.
I'm serious.
I'm not joking.
Rose one down there.
Yeah, send me a rose one.
But and you said salted caramel?
Yes.
That's my kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Silence, everyone.
When you're eating a French macaron, the...
Well, and for Eric, our engineer, who's been watching all this, what's your preference, my dear?
Whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go. Rose.
Okay, Elena, why don't you describe it?
Okay. Well, it's hard to even describe this, but...
Sensual.
It is more on the sensual side. And it's beautiful, actually, because it's not just a rose essence. Mm-hmm. You know, it pops really strong as a rose, which I'm a little bit surprised by that because most people seems a little bit daring, you know, to
yes.
me.
Uh-huh.
But I love this, you know. But most people don't even get close to something like this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I try not to be. I like the centers to taste like what you're having. Like the lemon is really, it's just like a sweet butter and lemon rind and lemon juice and a little bit of confectioner's sugar. But I want it you to know what you're tasting, but I don't want them to be sweet because the cookie's a little sweet, and I want them to be creamy, and I want it to, like, each macaron should be this total experience.
Well, that's what this is like.
Yeah, and so the thing with the textures is they're kind of crunchy on the outside and then chewy on the inside, and then you have the creamy center.
Like, it's beautifully balanced. To me, this is, like, beautiful. It's like, you know, as a floral designer, I just think of, you know, all the roses that would complement. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Yes, and I also, in the book that I got, he puts rose petals on some of his macaroons, and he puts this, like, little dewdrop on each petal, and I figured out what it is now from the book. It's a secret. I mean, it was worth the 135 euros that I spent.
Can you tell us a secret or no?
Well, yeah. It's a little teeny drop of glucose with some rose water in it.
Oh, really?
And it makes it look like a dewdrop on a rose.
I was just going to ask you, what is the source of the rose flavor?
It's an organic rose essential oil.
Local or from somewhere?
They're from Sebastopol, you know, and I wish I remembered.
No, that's okay. That's okay, because I know Russian River Rose Company as well distills very essential rose oil, and I was up there at their last open house of the year. It's such a remarkable place.
I'm going to have to go there.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
You definitely have to go there. In fact, I ordered some roses. I just put in three of their 4th of July roses, which are, it's a bush rose, red and white, and I ordered Betty Boop and one other kind, not Betty Davis, but something close. I can grow roses where I live, and I realize I'm just going to give in and grow roses because a lot of other things I try to go don't work. But they're really remarkable, and they have a fragrance garden. They have over 650 types of fragrance roses, and it's a distillery. So it's quite a wonderful place if you're interested in rose flavors. Russian River Rose Company up on Magnolia, just off of West Side Road, very close to it's very close to town of Petaluma, not out further on West Side Road. They've been guests here, and they've described the process of getting the rose oil, and it's just remarkable. And I have also cooked with it. They sell rose water as well. I'm not sure how much it is, 3 ounces maybe, something like that. In a beautiful bottle, $16, I think. And putting that into chocolate or various other things, it's really quite wonderful.
It's interesting because I actually impart a little bit of rose water when I make my cannolis. It doesn't call for that recipe
but now
at
we
all.
Know exactly.
But I always thought that element would be great for the ricotta.
Do you salt your ricotta when you make cannoli?
No.
No?
Why?
I do now because I was in Ragusa, Ilba. They'd been feeding us for days. They were bringing dessert, and I finally said, I can't eat dessert. I don't want to offend anyone, but no, I'm full. And the guy who was leading the tour we were on, it was a press tour, said, you can have a bite of mine. He gave me a bite of his cannoli. It's one of the best things I have ever eaten in my life. And I turned to get another bite. It was gone. It was too late for me to get to say I wanted one of my own. But the ricotta, everywhere we went, we had bowls of ricotta in Sicily, and it was all salted. And then when they made the cannoli, they of course would add sugar, but it had this other layer. And I started salting ricotta after that, just because I wanted that Sicilian flavor.
Well, there you go. I learned something myself.
I have to tell you, the salted caramel is absolutely delicious.
Oh, yay.
Really, really, really. And I don't care much for sweets.
Oh.
I really don't. I can pass up almost any sweet there is.
Okay,
and I really didn't think I was going to like a macaron.
Oh.
I thought, I'll be polite, and I can judge it, but I don't necessarily want it for myself. It's really good.
Yay. Yeah, I make the caramel, and it sounds kind of weird to not have sweet caramel, but I put a lot of butter and cream in the caramel when I make it to, have it be a little bit richer.
It's really good. It's really excellent.
And the salt
excellent.
Is from the Carmog. Yes. But she was afraid, so I have to be happy with buying salt at a farmer's market down there.
Now, where can people get your macarons?
They can get them at the Santa Rosa Saturday morning market. Right. I'm there every week, and I'm also at the Tuesday night Healdsburg market, too. And I'm in the St. Helena Friday Morning Market. He's got me in there every other week now.
Every other week.
It's a very pretty market. If you,
it is. Oh, the St. Helena Market is lovely.
It's by the high school, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then also on my website, I have my Macaroon of the Month Club. Mm-hmm. And if you're local, your macaroons are delivered every month, or you can come and pick them up at the at the farmer's market if you'd like. Yeah. But I try to keep those seasonal. And
now it says here that you only ship to Western states.
Yes, I started out overly ambitious shipping to, you know, Maryland. And then we had that huge storm, you know. Oh. I was sending things to Massachusetts and Florida and Chicago and everywhere.
They were frozen.
And they would, like, take, you know, when the big storm came, it was like a polar bear got a hold of them. And they, like, they made it, like, a week after I had sent them. Mm. And there's just so many things that can happen to these little, like, here's a broken one. Here, and if they bang around in the box, they're getting soft.
Well, I'll take that broken one, Dominique.
They break because they're very delicate. Yeah. So I'm just doing the Western states. They get there the next day. Uh-huh. Post office, easy.
Now, do you make other sweets?
I do. I make French pastries. I'm selling a lot of pommiers these days at the market. I have some pommier groupies. Okay. And if people don't know what a pommier is, it's a puff pastry rolled with sugar cookie. And I make pies with fresh fruit.
That's why you make fabulous pies.
Yeah, at the farmer's market. I get my fruit.
And you're sourcing your fruit from the farmer's market vendors,
yes,
right?
I am. Uh-huh. And so it's always seasonal. It's what's happening now. And so it's full of flavor and it's good. And the crusts are all made out of butter. And my sister finally convinced me to ask for a $3 deposit because I use glass pie plates only.
Oh, and good. Yes, absolutely. Ask for deposits. And where are you? Whose butter are you using?
Clover.
Clover.
You know.
Of course, yes, yes. Well, suddenly we're getting more butter options. You know, we've got...
Maybe Parmigiano Reggiano.
There's always that. But we've got Clover, Strauss, Spring Hill, McClellan, and I think I'm forgetting one. But we've got... probably have some of the best butter in the country.
We have some beautiful butter options. But for the quantities that I'm needing...
Yeah, Clover's who you need,
And they're consistent. And, you know, the cows still live here. So.
Yes. And how long have you been doing this?
I started doing, you know, selling them in 2008. So I guess 3 years now.
3 years.
But I never really thought that... I kind of thought, well, maybe I'd have my own little place. And, you know, my business plan is that I'll do it at the markets and get the word out. Because I figured if I opened a bakery right away, who was going to come to the bakery? Nobody would know who I am. So I'm doing the farmer's market thing.
I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Partly because, I love farmer's markets. But also, farmer's markets have taken the place of the town plaza. Mm-hmm. There are commons now. Mm-hmm. So it's a really nice to see things like paella, you know, like your macarons there.
Yeah, and it's really nice to meet these wonderful people and get to know your community more. You know, I really like that about it. And the vendors in the market, we're our own little community too.
Sure.
And it's just, you know, it's nice getting to meet everybody. Mm-hmm. I worked at a restaurant doing their pastries, and I didn't get to see who was eating stuff.
No one ever sees the pastry chef.
The scenes, right?
Yeah, so I like this.
Good move.
It's very nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, let's go through that. You're at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market at Veterans in the east parking lot of the Veterans Building every Saturday morning. And if you haven't noticed, that market has extended itself by an hour. Instead of being 8:30 in the morning until noon, it's now 8:30 until 1.
Very good. Yes, we're still there until 1 o'clock, so you can still get up late and come and find us.
Exactly. And, you know, the markets evolve throughout the course of the day. Mm-hmm. If you go at 11, that market is very different than if you go at 8:30 or if you go at 12:30.
Absolutely.
And I go at all different hours.
Uh-huh.
So the Santa Rosa Market and then the Healdsburg Market. And that used to be on the Town Plaza, and it's now in the same place as the Saturday Market, right?
Yes. Well, we're across the street from the Saturday Market. We're next to the Sari Building, which is an old tin building.
Right.
We're over there. And it's a very lovely, quaint little market. Lots of produce. Mm-hmm. peaches, lots of stone fruit are going to start coming
yes.
in. But right now there's a lot of cherries there. And
we've got about another 2 weeks of cherries if you want cherries.
Yes. Mm. I'm making
Eat
cherry pies these days.
Oh, wow.
Too. Oh, great.
Yeah.
What
California
do you prefer to use for cherry pies? What type of cherry?
You know, I just use whatever's going on okay. at the time, and they're all different. It's really interesting. In the beginning of the season, the color is lighter, and then at the end, it's really black and dark and rich. And I have a guy at the Santa Luna Market who wants me to have some cherries shipped from Michigan for the oh. tart cherries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wavering. I don't know, because I can't say everything's local anymore. But
yeah, I don't think anyone is growing tart cherries around here.
No,
I haven't seen any.
It's cold enough here
yeah.
for that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's where we find you.
Mm-hmm.
And the St. Helena Farmers Market is
mm-hmm.
on Saturday mornings. Okay, and then, I mean, time flies when you're having
certainly
a
does.
Delicious time
oh, boy,
here
fly.
On Mouthful. So, Per La Stella for the Stars, Fabiano and Elena Ramacci. How do people get your wines? In the hand-painted bottles.
Well, right now we're mostly restaurants have picked up our wines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Can people buy them if they come to your website?
Yes, they can.
Yes, and the wine shop over in Hillsburg, the retail
oh,
shop.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we have, even if you go to certain restaurants or even Mayacamas Country Club, that was my second account.
Okay. Or
congratulations.
I hit a home run on that one.
or you could call us direct mm-hmm. from our yeah. website.
So, okay, yeah, just the website is Per La Stella. That's PERLESTELLE.com. And you're at the farmer's market in Santa Rosa on Saturdays every other Saturday.
Yes, every
so the
second and fourth week.
Fourth. Second and fourth Saturdays.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What happens on the fifth?
We don't know.
No one knows. That's the big question. No one really knows what happens
she
on
paints
the fifth.
Yeah. She paints bottles on the fifth Saturday.
Yeah, I'm painting bottles.
And so, very quickly, we didn't talk about your olive oil. So real quickly, we've got about 1 minute.
So this is, just to finish up the paella, when I plated it, I actually just drizzled a little bit of the extra virgin olive oil, Sonoma County olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's from Merchant and Miller's. And
it's from who?
Merchant and Miller's.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's all basically Sonoma County olives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
nice.
Yeah. So then I kind of infused the saffron in there just to give it a little bit of that nice flavor. And then it's just beautiful when, when you get to see the saffron threads just floating around the oil. As you can see here, Michelle.
Yes, and it's beautiful.
There you go.
And
get the true effect there.
And where does your saffron come from? I'm sorry, we might be running out of time.
No, my sister's friend, her uncle actually imports some saffron. And
do you know where he's getting it from?
You know what? I really have to find out some more information.
Yeah, find out if
she actually got it for
Afghan,
me because he's out of town. And uh-huh. I was like, okay, great. I'm glad she provided me with the source. But I need to look into it. I know it's not Moroccan. It's from Spain. So that's...
it's from Spain. Okay.
Yeah, it's from Spain.
That's good.
Yeah.
I had a winemaker, Ellen from Russian Hill Winery. She brought me back some amazing Iranian saffron, just gosh,
wow.
The best saffron in the world. We're out of time.
So
thank you so much. Thank you for all the beautiful things
thank
that you brought. And thank you for joining us. And be sure to meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week.
Dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread.
Now listen to what the preacher said.
To the Lord, let
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing,
to the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord.
time for dinner now. Let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said.
It's a long, long, let praise be.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now. Let's go.
We got some,
we got
beans.
Some beans and good cornbread.
Good cornbread.
Listen to what the preacher said.
To the Lord, let praises be.
Praise
some beans and some